So this is our qualitative picture that has emerged, right? So we understand a lot about this system. Okay, so we have this zero point energy, we have this spacing of energy, and I want to focus on this spacing of energy. Because the fact is, there is something very, very deep in this. You will be surprised at how deep this is. So the energy levels are evenly spaced. Okay, so the difference from one energy level to the next is just Planck's constant times the natural frequency of oscillation. Does anyone recognize that formula? Does that formula ring a bell somehow? Energy of the wave, yeah.
Isn't that formula
that Einstein discovered about? That's the energy that Einstein discovered about photons, right. So Einstein's formula says E photon. The energy of a photon is just Planck's constant times the frequency of the photon, times the color of the photon, the wave, the frequency. Okay, so that looks a lot, that looks quite similar. Okay, in fact it is, it's the same thing. Okay, so let's look at this. So this is actually brings us to something called quantum field theory. So if you take quantum mechanics, the stuff that we're talking about here, which we know is based in a Newtonian universe. So all of the quantum mechanics we're talking about imagines a Newtonian space and a Newtonian time. Okay, if we take those quantum ideas and combine them with special relativity, so the fact that there's a speed limit in the universe, and we get time dilation and length contraction and all that stuff, relativity of simultaneity. If we combine those two ideas together, we get something called quantum field theory. Okay. And so what is that? So it's basically, first of all, field. So a good example of that is the electromagnetic field. So Maxwell's electromagnetic waves. Okay, that's an example of a field. And what we do is we quantize that field. So classically, light is an electromagnetic wave, electromagnetic field, electric and magnetic fields oscillating, you know, filling space and oscillating and doing all kinds of stuff. And when we apply quantum ideas to that, what do you think happens? Or what do you know happens? And then we get the idea of photons. So a photon is a purely quantum mechanical object. It has no analog in the classical world. It's this quantum thing. Okay, so photons come from applying quantum mechanics to electromagnetism. Okay, so let's look at how this arises. So suppose that I have a box, and this box is a box made out of mirrors. Okay, and inside that box I have some light. These are perfect mirrors that don't absorb. Okay, and so this light is bouncing back and forth inside that box. Okay, so we think of light as a wave for a minute. In fact, for the next couple minutes, light is a wave, electromagnetic wave. So it's a wave bouncing back and forth inside a box. What's going to happen? I got a wave moving to the right. It bounces off the mirror. I got a wave moving to the left, standing wave. Okay, so what I'm going to get is standing waves. Okay, and I'm only going to get certain allowed standing waves, et cetera. So an electromagnetic wave, suppose we have one going to the right like this. So basically what it looks like is if I take a snapshot of that wave at any instant of time, it looks like this. In space, there's an electric field like this. That's E. And there's a magnetic field which is perpendicular to that, okay, which looks like this. Like we drew yesterday. So there's a magnetic field B. So at any instant of time, if you take a snapshot of a light wave that's zipping by you like this, you're going to see this pattern of electric field going up and down. Here the electric field is large and positive, then it goes to zero, then it's large and negative, and so on. And the B is, and the magnetic field is perpendicular to that. Okay, and this whole thing, that whole pattern of waves that we've taken a snapshot of, moves to the right at the speed of light. Okay, and so that thing slams into that mirror. Electric field flips around, magnetic field not, and it comes back. And so then we add those two waves up and we get a standing wave. So inside we have this standing wave, which I'll just draw in a more simplified way as just this. So it's some kind of a standing wave. That's, say, zero at the ends. Okay? So you can imagine that there are lots of possible standing waves. We could have standing waves going this way, back and forth, and we could have standing waves going this way, standing waves going into the board, standing waves at all kinds of angles. We can have all kinds of standing waves inside that box. Okay? So what we're going to do is focus on one of those standing waves. Each of those standing waves is called a mode of oscillation. So each electromagnetic standing wave or mode of frequency F okay, so you can imagine that these different standing waves will oscillate at different frequencies. So the standing waves that have just a few lumps will be oscillating slowly. Standing waves with many lumps between them will be oscillating very quickly. So let's pick just one of those standing waves, say this one right over here. That standing wave or mode oscillates with a certain frequency F. And it oscillates harmonically. Okay. It oscillates harmonically in this sense. If I pick any point on that standing wave, it goes down and up, down and up, down and up, like this, harmonically, in the same way as, in exactly the same way as our ball inside the bowl. If we look at the x projection of that ball, it's just going back and forth on that x-axis harmonically. The word is harmonic. That's a special kind of vibration, a very special kind of vibration. It's very simple. Okay, and so any point on that wave oscillates harmonically. The entire mode oscillates harmonically. It's this thing which oscillates harmonically in the same way that this is a thing oscillating harmonically. So what can you tell me about the quantum nature of that thing which is oscillating harmonically? There's a probability involved, right? What can you tell me about its energies? Energy. Only discrete allowed energies. Okay? So in exactly the same way, there will only be discrete allowed energies. Okay, so it's discrete. So the total energy in any one of those modes, in particular a mode of frequency F, the energy in that mode is this. So if we look back at our picture, if we look back at our picture here, the energy in that mode can be either this, or this, or this, or this, or this. So to pick any one of these, what I do is I just go 1/2 HF, the zero point energy, and I add an integer number of HFs. So if I add 1, 2, 3 HFs, I mean this amount of energy. If I add 1 HF, I mean this amount of energy. If there's no HFs, I mean this amount of energy. Okay, so where n is an integer. What do you think that n means physically? What? Yeah, it's the energy level. So it tells me which energy level. This is n equals 1, 2, 3, 4. But physically, inside the box, what's inside the box when n is 5? Sorry? Number of photons. Right. It's the number of photons. So if I have an electromagnetic standing wave like this, which is oscillating with some frequency F classically. So it's a classical wave. I've got this standing wave oscillating with some frequency F. The energy quantum mechanically is given by this, where n is some integer. And n tells me quantum mechanically how many photons there are present. So when I say the energy, when n is equal to 5, say, the amount of energy is 5 HF plus 1/2 HF, 5.5 HF. That's how much energy is in that mode. And what it's saying is there are 5 photons. There are 5 photons jiggling back and forth, making up that standing wave.
So classically, when you think about the energy of a wave, how is the energy related to the amplitude? If the amplitude goes up, if the amplitude of a wave has gone up, the energy has gone up, right? So if I have some water wave in the water, if it has a low amplitude, it means there's only a little bit of energy in it. Okay, but if I splash in that water like crazy, give it lots of amplitude, then it's got lots of energy. And as the frequency goes up, the energy goes up too, right? So the energy of each one of those five photons is h times f. If it's a red photon, it's maybe not so much energy. If it's a blue photon, it's more energy. Okay, so yeah, so that's it. So this is quantum field theory. Now you guys can do quantum field theory. Yeah, absolutely. So this is number of photons. And yeah, so when n is equal to 0, we still have an energy of 1/2 hf in the box. Right. Yeah, so what type of energy? Well, this is so this is basically there's sort of a Heisenberg uncertainty principle for electric and magnetic fields. Just like you have Heisenberg uncertainty for delta x delta p is greater than or equal to h over 4 pi, there's a Heisenberg uncertainty connecting the electric and magnetic fields. Okay, so you can't have exactly zero electric and exactly zero magnetic. There's some uncertainty in these electric and magnetic fields in space. So there's fluctuations. Sorry? Yeah, so there's always at least this kind of zero-point fluctuation of the electromagnetic field. So that would be the terminology, zero-point fluctuation of the electromagnetic field. And it just represents, classically, this sort of random kind of jiggling of electric and magnetic, like the presence of random fluctuations of electric and magnetic field. Okay, So do you believe that? Do you believe that inside a box like this, there is this stuff happening? Can we measure it or use it? Excellent question. We can do both. Okay, so here's how we measure it. This is one of the most amazing experiments that emerged in well, first of all, the theoretical prediction. So early on in quantum field theory, so 1930s or so, a guy called Casimir was thinking about this sort of stuff. And he looked at that and said, asked exactly the same question. So what if n is equal to 0? What does that mean? Well, so here's the experiment that he thought of. If I take two metal plates like this, and I put them, you know, parallel to each other, and these are ideal conditions. So it's a perfect vacuum. It's pitch black. All the light has been removed. It's at zero temperature, all that stuff. Okay, so there's nothing. There's nothing but two plates, and they're hanging from little silk threads like this. Do you expect anything to happen? What do you expect that might happen? Yeah. So roughly speaking, okay. So what happens exactly is there is a force of attraction between these plates. Now, normally you would think, well, sure, there's a force of attraction. If I have one plate that's, say, positively charged and one plate negatively charged, then, yeah, there'll be an electrostatic attraction. But what I'm saying here is that you have neutralized both of these plates. There is zero net charge on all those plates. So electrostatic forces do not exist. Okay? And yet there is still a force of attraction between these plates. Okay? And so basically what's going on here is okay, so then there's a number of ways of looking at this. So one way is between these plates here, these are electromagnetic waves can reflect off of metal plates. Okay, so they're like mirrors, or just imagine they're mirrors. Okay, so inside here, I can have waves moving back and forth. Okay, but because they're bound waves, that means what kind of waves are we talking about? Standing waves. We've got one moving to the right, one moving to the left. They add up and make standing waves. And so there will only be certain allowed standing waves. Okay, so here's one standing wave. Here's the next standing wave. Here's the next one, and so on and so forth. Okay, so there are these standing waves. And associated with each one of those standing waves is this 1/2 HF. Okay, so I've removed all the photons. There are no photons in here, and yet there is still this zero-point energy. 1/2 HF for, say, that first mode, plus 1/2 HF for that second mode, plus, and so on. Okay? So there's actually a bit of energy in there. Okay? So that's a good question. That's right. So according to this, now I'll get back to that in a second. According to this, the answer to this is just infinite. Infinite. There's an infinite amount of energy between those plates. That's a bit of a problem. Because if that were true, then the amount of warping of space-time would be very, very large, and this is happening everywhere in space, and the entire universe would collapse into, like, you know, this whatever, black hole. Okay, so that ain't happening. So this is actually an interesting problem. Okay, there is a solution to this problem. But anyway, so let me just point out. So in between the plates, we have that happening. Outside the plates, there's a plate here, sure, but there's no plates out here. So these zero-point fluctuations, these waves, these zero-point waves, whatever you call them, there's no restrictions on them. Here there was a restriction because it's bound. Here there's no restriction because it's not bound. So basically all vibrations are possible out here. Okay? So the situation is a little bit like this. If I have two boats, and they're in the water like this, and we're in like choppy seas, wind, and all that stuff, okay? Then what we've got is waves splashing into the boat here, waves splashing into the boat here. There's all kinds of wave activity out here, and ignoring everything else, that wave activity exerts a force this way, pushing the boat this way. If there were no other boat here, then we would have the same amount of wave activity on this side, equal forces, and it would just kind of sit there. It would just kind of jiggle around, but sit there. Okay? And similarly here, we've got jiggling of waves out here, which exert a force on this side of this boat. Okay, but between the two, there's a wind shadow. Okay, and so there's fewer waves in here. There's less wave activity inside here, so there's less force this way. So what happens to the two boats over time? They crash into each other. So if you have two boats out on the open sea, you have to put like a brace between them or they're just going to crash together. Okay, so there's a force, a net force between them. So same thing is happening here. There's tons of wave activity out here, this zero point fluctuation, and tons of wave activity out here. Normally, if you just have one plate, it just sits there. But because you put two plates, you're restricting, you're not allowed to do any kind of wave vibration. So there's less wave activity inside and there's a net force pushing them together. And you can actually measure that net force. The prediction is that that net force goes like 1/1 the distance between them to the power of 4. So as they get closer together, the force of attraction grows very rapidly, like a 1/1 distance to the 4. Okay, so if I reduce the distance by a factor of 2, 2 times 2 is 4 times 2 is 8 times 2 times 16, the force increases by a factor of 16. Okay, and so this was predicted a long time ago in the 1930s. And measurements were made, I'm not exactly sure when, but in the 1990s, super accurate measurements were made, which measured exactly this. And quantum mechanics predicts exactly that factor, and they were measured. And this has important effects when we're dealing with nanotechnology. Nanotechnology means we've reached the point where we can manipulate things at nanoscales. Okay, that's like at basically atomic scales. So at atomic scales, you know, we have, I don't know, some silicon substrate like this, some material, and we want to build something like this, which is, some objects. We're building objects, okay? And so basically we have one plate over here next to another plate, which is this ground plate with some distance between them. Well, there's a Casimir force attracting these plates. And what happens is everything just gets gummed up. And so you have to find some way to overcome this Casimir force problem or use it to your advantage. And that's your job, is to figure out ways to use it to your advantage. Okay, that's, we have clever people to try to do that. Okay, so what about what? Oh, all right, so this infinity here, you're worried about that infinity.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so infinity versus infinity, you still got zero.
Well,
infinity minus infinity, what is that?
I don't know. It's not a definite thing. So infinity minus infinity is anything.
Okay. This occurs very frequently in physics, where you do infinity minus infinity, and you make it make sense. Okay? But here's another way to make sense of this. Okay? And since we only have 5 minutes, let me just tell you this just quickly. So what is this zero-point energy between these plates? So I said it's 1/2 HF1 plus 1/2 HF2, all that kind of stuff. Okay, so it's 1/2 HF1 plus 1/2 HF2, and so on. These frequencies, how do they increase? So here's the standing wave, this one. And then here's the next standing wave, and here's the next standing wave. Okay, so I'm labeling the standing waves 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. If this vibrates at some frequency, F0, say, how rapidly does this second one vibrate? Twice F0. How rapidly does the third one oscillate? Okay, so these frequencies are proportional to just the integers. Okay, so what this is this is some constant, 1/2 HF and some factors involving C and all that stuff, times, so once some finite constant times 1, plus 2, plus 3, plus 4, and so on. Infinity factorial is 1 times 2 times 3. So we're just adding these up. But it still looks big, right? This is just infinity, right? Now, it actually turns out that this number here, using some tricky math, you can convince yourself that this number is negative 1 over 12. I love math. Math rules. Do we have time to show you how? Okay. Okay, so let's suppose that we had, okay, let's consider this. What is 1 over 1 minus x? Let's do longhand division. Okay, how do I do this? What do I start with? 1 times this is 1 minus x. I subtract this, what do I get? Okay, what do I put here? Plus x. X times this is x minus x squared. What's the remainder? What's here? And so on. Okay, so this is 1 plus x squared plus x cubed, etc. Okay, let's see if this works. So what we've found is two ways of representing a function. Okay, so this is one way of representing that function. This is another way. And so let's try putting in x equal to 1/2. Okay, on the left-hand side, what do we get? On the right-hand side, what do we get? We get 1 plus 1/2 plus 1/2 squared is 1/2 cubed, etc. Let's add all those numbers up, see if this works. What we take is 1, okay, plus 1/2. 1/2 is this, okay, plus 1/4. That means 1/2 of this, plus 1/8, which is 1/2 of what remains, and so on and so forth. So if I add this all up, I get, this is 0, 1, 2, I get 2. So that's right. Okay, so we're happy with that, right? This is called an infinite series. Okay, now let's suppose that we try x equals 2 in there. What's the left-hand side? When x is 2, we got what? Minus 1. Okay, let's try 1 plus x plus and so on. Plug in x equals 2 into that. What do we get? 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 2. Okay. So now let's suppose that you were given this thing. You had no idea where this came from, but someone gave you that and said, what is that equal to? You would say, oh, well, that's just infinity. Except it's what? But it's negative 1, right? That's right. That's right. So the point here is, okay, let's look at along the x-axis. We know that this thing has a problem at x equals 1, right? Because 1 over 1 minus 1 is 1 over 0 is infinity, right? So that's 0. We know it has a problem here at x equals 1, and that's called a singularity, okay? And so what we have done is in writing this thing, 1 over 1 minus x, this 1 over 1 minus x is valid everywhere along the x-axis except at that point. It's valid both for x less than 1 and for x bigger than 1. It works everywhere except at that point. Okay? Now what we've done is we've taken that function and we've written it in a different way. We've written it as this infinite series. As you're pointing out, the infinite series is valid only on a circle, well, only in this range from minus 1 to plus 1. Okay, so if you plug in a number, x, that's between minus 1 and plus 1, this formula will give you the right answer. But that formula is not valid outside of here. Okay, it'll give you the wrong answer. Okay, so this is called a series representation, and it has a certain range of validity. This is the original function. Okay, so what physicists do is they say, I see that series 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, and so on. It's just obviously infinite. But maybe it's a similar situation like this. Maybe what we're dealing with is a series expansion of some function that really is well-defined, okay? But it's just being evaluated outside of its range of validity. So let's work backwards and try to find a function that is sort of defined everywhere, well-defined everywhere, whose series expansion looks like this. Okay? And it turns out that such a thing exists, and it's called the Riemann zeta function. Okay, and the Riemann zeta function, and the way you do this, this is where complex numbers comes in very powerful, okay? So the Riemann zeta function is similarly ill-defined at 1, okay? It has a singularity there, okay? But it's well-defined, so Riemann zeta function. So it's zeta as a function of z, and z is, I can let z be a real number, like x, so I can put in a real number in there, and it'll be well defined. I can also put in imaginary numbers, or complex numbers in general. So here's a complex number. Okay, so I'm going to have an x and a y axis here. This complex number is x plus iy, which I'll just call z. That complex number z, I could stick in there, and I would have a well defined function here. The function would be well defined at that point. Okay? So I don't want to get into all the details and so on, but basically at the end of the day, if you look at this this series here, it's basically the Riemann zeta function being evaluated at a certain point. And the series expansion of this function is invalid at that point. But you know what the Riemann zeta function is, and it's actually, and you can actually evaluate it, and it turns out to be negative 1 over 12. Okay? And then what you do is you say, you know what this constant is. It's just 1 half h times 1 over the speed of light or whatever. Okay, so there's some simple constant here times this negative 1 over 12. Okay, that's the energy. And then these frequencies depend upon the size of the box. So your final expression for the energy inside the box, first of all, it's finite. It's not infinite. Okay? Secondly, it's negative. Thirdly, it depends upon the size of the box. Okay, and so it looks something like this. The zero-point energy inside the box is something like negative some trivial constant, whatever, who cares, divided by 1 over length, is it length cubed? Let's call it d. D is the separation between the plates. I think it's 1 over d cubed. If I take, okay, what is energy? Energy is force times distance, right? Okay, so what I want is energy divided by distance is force. So, yeah, so I think this is right. So it looks like that. Okay, so if I take that energy, what I notice is, first of all, it's negative. But if I make the plate separation smaller, what does this thing become? Bigger. Okay, so it becomes more negative. Okay, so the energy between the plates becomes more negative, so it reduces as you bring those plates together. Things like to go to minimum energy, and so there's an attractive force associated with that tendency to lower energy. Okay? Isn't that amazing? That is so cool. The power of mathematics. Yeah.